I spent parts of several days during my vacation the week before last doing some weeding along the back and side of my house. It's not my favorite thing to do, but there comes a time when it has to be done. I dug out dandelions and crabgrass and some kind of thistle. I pulled out vines and milkweed and numerous other weeds, the names of which I do not know. But the worst thing was trying to get those tall blades of grass that had grown up through the middle of the hosta plants and in among the daylilies. What happens is that the thin blades of grass grow up from seed that has settled in between the stalks of the hosta plants, so you can't really dig them out with a trowel. But at the same time, if you don't get close enough down to the ground, the stalk of grass just snaps off. And it won't be long before it returns. No better is the approach of grabbing the grass low to the ground and accidentally pulling up the stalks of the hosta as well. Even worse, I think, is trying to get the grass sorted from the daylilies, because it's basically the same problem, but the slender leaves of the lilies are even easier to accidentally pull up as you try to pull up the grass. And not just that, but even after I thought I had gotten all of the grass out of the hosta plants and the daylilies, I would look back again at the work that I had just done, and sure enough, there would be blades of grass I had missed. One here, one there, six more here, five more there. The more I looked, the more I saw what I had missed. It was never ending. In the parable for this morning, it's wheat and weeds we are talking about, or in Eugene Peterson's The Message translation, wheat and thistles. The seed that is sown is all good to begin with. The farm workers plant the seed for a good crop, but after dark, someone else slips into the fields and sows thistles. Now, of course, at first you can't tell what seeds have been sown. You don't know until the plants start to come up. And in this story, as the wheat begins to grow, so too do the weeds. The farmhands offer to wade into the field and pull out the weeds from among the wheat, but the farmer declines the offer. "No," he says, "for in gathering the weeds, you would uproot the wheat along with them." He instructs his workers to wait until the final harvest, when it will be easier to collect everything at once, and then sort the weeds from the wheat. Seth mentioned last week that many of Jesus' parables are not to be understood as allegories. They are more nuanced and mysterious and multi-layered in their meaning than that, except that in the case of the parable of the sower that he preached on last week, Matthew follows up the story with Jesus giving an allegorical explanation. This thing symbolizes this, and that thing symbolizes that. The same is true this week. Matthew has Jesus tell the parable of the weeds and the wheat, and then follow it up with a very specific "this is this and that is that" explanation when the disciples ask him to share the meaning with them. He answered, "The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world. The good seed are the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the children of the evil one. The enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are the angels. Just as the weeds are collected and burned up with fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all evildoers, and they will throw them into the furnace of fire, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Let anyone with ears listen." I think it's interesting that the explanation that Matthew has Jesus voicing is focused solely on clarifying what happens to those who are good and what happens to those who are evil. That is, what steps are taken at the end of the age to separate the good and evil, the sorting and judging, the rewards and the punishments. What is missing is any clarification about just who is who and what is what. What's the difference between the weeds and the wheat? How do you know which is which? How is such judgment made? And is it possible for anything to change along the way, from sowing to harvest? Is the good good and the bad bad from the beginning to the end and forevermore? Is there any bad wheat? Any good weeds? And there's this question as well, the question that doesn't want to wait until the end of time, the end of the age. What happens now? What happens now? What is to be done now? In the in-between time, in the time between when the farmhands sow the seed and the enemies sow the weeds, and things start to grow up in the fields, and it becomes obvious that not all the seed is the same and not all the crops are good. And, at least according to the farmer in the story, as long as we are still in the age of growing, the wheat might be damaged if we try to pull out the weeds. In these long, drawn-out days of growing, of development, of maturing, in these days when the story is still unfolding, and you can't get rid of the weeds without damaging the wheat, what do you do? What happens now? Because the weeds and the wheat are mixed together. They are intertwined, at least for now. And it may not even be completely clear which is the good seed and which is the bad, at least for now. Oh, sure, as the story comes to its conclusion, the weeds are sorted from the wheat. Everything shows its true colors in the end. Everything becomes clear. Everything gets sorted out. The weeds are thrown into the furnace. The wheat is gathered into the barn. In other words, evil is not allowed to have its way forever. Evil in terms of either the causes of sin or the perpetrators of sin. But what about now? Truth be told, I find that I want to do the sorting now. I want to do the weeding now, especially when I see that the weeds have gotten out of hand. And not just in the literal sense, not just around the side and the back of my house. I want to be clear about who and what is good and who and what is not. Acting as the farmhand in the story, I would want to do the pulling of weeds now. And I wouldn't mind getting rid of the whole pile of weeds right now as well. Separation seems to me to be the thing that makes me feel better. Sort, separate, discard, move on. But on the other hand, what if, in the context of the parable, I am not the farmhand doing the weeding, the sorting, the separating? After all, Matthew says the ones doing the sorting are the angels, while the children of God are the seed. So, what if I take my appointed place in the parable, and I'm not the farmhand who is ready to do the weeding, but I am simply the seed planted in the field? What if I am the tender shoot just starting to come up? What if I am the wheat planted next to the weeds, and if the farmhand pulls the weeds energetically, emphatically, I just might get uprooted too? Or how about this? What if it is not yet entirely clear whether I am the wheat or the weed? Maybe there are times and circumstances where I am one thing, and other times when I am the other thing. Sometimes when I am the wheat, and sometimes when I am the weed. And what if I need some more time to change that, to fix that, to recover from that? What if wheat can become weeds, whether by accident or by intention? But also, what if weeds can become wheat by awareness, by repentance, by grace? And what if those things can happen now, before the end of the age, before the sorting, the judging, the separating, the punishing, and the rewarding? What if all of us, individually as well as collectively, would turn ourselves away from our weediness and turn toward our wheatfulness? maybe yanking the weeds up now and running the risk of damaging the wheat isn't the only answer. On the other hand, maybe just passively waiting for the end of the story isn't the only answer either. Maybe Jesus tells the story of what happens at the end of the age, not only to warn us about what will happen, but to urge us, to motivate us, to do something now. Not something destructive, but something redemptive. To be converted now. To be change agents now. With the death of civil rights leader and former Congressman John Lewis yesterday at the age of 80 after a battle with pancreatic cancer, I was reminded of a story that came out about Lewis about a dozen years ago when a former Klansman who had assaulted Lewis and knocked him unconscious in South Carolina during a civil rights action in 1961 came forward 48 years later to apologize to Lewis. The story, as reported in the Rock Hill Herald, in Rock Hill, South Carolina in 2009, went like this. All U.S. Representative John Lewis knew for almost 48 years is that at Rock Hill's bus station, somebody with white fists beat him to the ground. Some tall, rangy bruiser in a, quote, group of young men busted his lip open, bloodied his black face just for trying to enter the waiting room marked whites. The fists knocking him senseless May 9, 1961, had stayed fresh in his memory even after the blows vanished into the history of the holy cause for black men and white men to be equal. "I knew someone attacked me on May 9th, but I wouldn't have recognized him," said Lewis of 1961. Tuesday, those same white fists came back into his life. The hands were inches from Lewis's black face again, this time not clenched, this time trembling, hoping. That long ago white face of hate sat in a chair next to him. "I am ashamed of it," said the man behind the fists. "I hate to admit it." The right fist came to Lewis on Tuesday in the form of an outstretched hand, hoping to be shaken. And then the open arms of Elwin Wilson, who lamented that he wished he had had the valor to offer a handshake so long ago when he admittedly hated almost all black people and used his fist to show he meant business. Then, without a pause by either man, an embrace by two men who met so briefly so long ago with a crush of punches to the face. "I am sorry," Wilson said to Lewis. Lewis, 68, who had been a 21-year-old seminary student in 1961, said without pause to the only man to ever admit being one of the mob who beat him and another civil rights protester, "I forgive you." Wilson's in-person apology, which followed an apology he made in January 24th article in the Herald, is not only important to Rock Hill in South Carolina, but, quote, all around the country, Lewis said. The spirit of the cause for civil rights always was love and redemption, Lewis said, never malice or hate, even after beatings. And this powerful sentence that I want to read next is the one that I want you to hear from the columnist and his reflections. He writes, "The cause for equality has taken years to take root in people such as Wilson, but it has turned from a seed into a majestic canopy of human togetherness." It happened Tuesday in Lewis's office on Capitol Hill with the Capitol building looming through a window. The story gained traction at the time because Lewis was immediate and wholehearted in his forgiveness. But when I went back and looked for the story, I also discovered that it was only a few years later, just a few years after that encounter, that the man who had sought forgiveness, Elwin Wilson, had died. Apparently, he reached out for grace not that long before his own end time. And apparently, there are those times, those instances, maybe it takes 48 years even, when weeds can become wheat. Or as the columnist from South Carolina put it, The cause for equality takes root and has turned from a seed into a majestic canopy of human togetherness. Or as Lewis himself put it in his 2012 book, Across That Bridge, quote, "I was surprised to hear him," referring to Mr. Wilson, "clearly restate 40-some years later the essence of what I had said to the police officer as I declined to press charges almost a half century earlier. We're not here to cause trouble. We're here so that people will love each other. The impact we left was undeniable," end quote. Lewis stayed true to his pacifism, planting the seeds of that alongside his nonviolent action and his integrationist convictions. He planted those seeds and they grew, and weeds grew alongside. And then, years later, this example of what could be, this one glimmer of hope, the apology and the forgiveness, and at least in that small corner of the field, a harvest of hope and mercy. So we can be weeds, then wheat. We can move from something failed to something recovered to something learned before the end of the age. I don't say that lightly because this is a challenging, complex, and complicated time. Weeds and wheat are growing up together, often in the very same fields. It is hard to be patient. It is hard to let God's angels do their work in the appointed time and the appointed way. It is hard to wait. It is hard to suffer. It is hard to be strong. But then again, I think right now that if I am the seed in the story, planted in the ground, the tender shoot just starting to come up, the crop planted alongside other crops, the sometimes wheat, sometimes weed, I probably wouldn't mind a little more patience or forbearance, if only for my own sake, to give me a little more time to start bearing the right kind of fruit. Sometimes judging is the easier part, the easier path even. Pulling the weeds out of our lives is much harder. Pulling the weeds out of our systems and our society is even harder. Caring and being careful is harder than judging the carelessness of others. Fertilizing the fields with grace is hard. Even waiting for it all to be sorted out is hard. I'd like, as I said earlier, to sort and separate the weeds from the wheat right now. Not to wait, not to worry, not to have to live with the changes and complexities around me. But then I pause, and in that pause, I realize I hope someone would give me a little more time, maybe another word of encouragement or even warning to make a turn now. Would it take 48 years? I hope not. But maybe the patience I want for myself is the patience I need to give to others. Maybe the mistakes I am making now are the same ones I'd like a little more time, a little more grace to fix just now. I can imagine there will be a time for separating and sorting, for judging, for punishments and rewards. A time when the wheat will be harvested and then stored in the barn so it can be available to feed the hungry. And the weeds will be gathered up and burned in the fire so they will no longer spread their seeds of destruction. But for now, I'm going to try to nurture the wheat and outlast the weeds, both in myself and in the world, and trust that God is still at work. Amen. Some moments now of silent prayer and reflection.